are not in favor of the traditional courts bill. Out of 9 provinces, 3 of the provinces said it must be scrapped. Another 3 said it must be amended. And the other one said they must be given 3 months to look at it. So out of all the provinces in South Africa, only one province, which is the Northern Cape, said they like the traditional courts bill.
From the Wings Archive, you've been listening to the history of opposition to South Africa's traditional courts bill. Successfully opposed by the rural women's movement and many other sectors for 15 years, it was passed once again in 2022 and signed into law with all objectionable issues intact in 2023. Suzanne Ngubane, whom you heard in this program, was a leader in getting women's rights into South Africa's post-apartheid constitution, and a co-founder and leader of the rural women's movement, which largely strategized the opposition to the traditional courts bill. Suzanne died of COVID in December 2020. Facing threats and violence against her, she had retreated to live in her partially destroyed home in rural KwaZulu-Natal province. Reportedly, armed men blocked anyone from coming to her aid.
In a society where the degree of gender violence is high, the struggle to protect women's democratic and constitutional rights still continues.
Amanda. You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts Obi Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
Maybe I didn't treat you.
Good morning, Portland Pollies. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and you are listening to Radical Romance, the show for those of you in non-traditional relationships, meaning those of you in either open or poly relationships. This is the radio show for you. If at any point during the next hour, I'm here from 10 until 11 this morning, you have a question for me or my guests, I'm doing a guest interview today with Kara and Day. Those are my guests. You'll meet them in a second. Anybody, call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Before I get to the interview, as typical, I'm going to go through a few of the New York Times ethicist columns, which I feel stimulates your thoughts on any of your past poly or open relationships. Okay, so this first one is from clearly a reluctant or regretful husband. And so the heading is, I let my wife have an affair. Do I have to console her now that it's over? Interesting situation. He goes on to write, I have been married for many years, meaning decades, and I still love and care deeply about my partner. Over the past year, she had an affair, and I knew about it from the beginning. She said that she needed it, that it gave her vitality, that she enjoyed a sexual freedom that she had longed for, and that she felt was wrong to do this in secret without my consent. So I agreed. That's why I called him a reluctant partner. I'm not getting he was 100% on board. What she said made sense to me, and she convincingly assured me this was no threat to our relationship. At the same time, I always suffered when she was away with her affair partner and could not find a way to take this easily. She recently decided to break it off because the overall emotional burden for both of us was so great. But while she was grieving about it, I did feel relief. Even though I wish I could have better coped with the situation, I rationally and ethically considered, okay, it conflicted with something deeper inside me that I can't exactly change. Let's see, so I'm going to go ahead and find the ethicist's response to this, gent. So the ethicist goes on to say, we don't have voluntary control over our emotional responses, at least not in any straightforward way. You're glad, she's sad, and neither one of you can simply choose to feel otherwise. From what you say, it sounds as if she gave up the affair for you and for her relationship with you, just as you consented to it for her and for your relationship with her. You most likely felt you had little choice about acquiescing to what she wanted, and in time, she may have felt that she had little choice about acquiescing to what you clearly wanted. Your partnership would not have gone well otherwise. You perhaps thought if you had withheld your consent, it would have not gone well. So he wraps up saying, while you simply can't resolve to feel otherwise, maybe you could help her deal with the loss out of gratitude for her belated acknowledgement about your needs. Solace is one of the gifts of marital love, and consoling someone you love when they're in pain doesn't require that you share that pain. Still, these distinctions may be elusive in practice, and so it may be worth your both talking this all through with the counselor. Neither one of you will ever be able to adjust to your feelings on demand, but it could help you to give them somewhere to go in a way that helps you stay connected. Okay, so that's the ethicist's response to that interesting dilemma. If you're going to open up a relationship, I think it's important to really discuss the ramifications with your partner before you do, on both of you, but don't be a reluctant participant. That's my personal opinion. That's just my two cents. Okay, next one. Oh, this is funny. This is one for our times, the here and now. Can I use AI to look better online? The reader goes on to write, I recently used an artificial intelligence program to create a headshot for my social media accounts. The program asked me to provide several pictures of myself and select clothing choices and background locales. It then spit out a number of AI created photos. I was pleased with the results. The AI photos looked like me, just slightly improved. Fuller hair, fewer wrinkles, etc. I uploaded the best one to my social media account, and within minutes, over-the-top compliments started coming in, saying things like stunning, crazy, gorgeous. The commentary went on for days, and she clearly loved it. My husband thinks I'm just being dishonest by not disclosing that my headshot was generated by AI. I disagree, on the other hand. Individuals and magazines publish Photoshop pictures all the times without disclosure, which is true. I mean, most of those models on the cover of Harper's Bazaar, Cosmopolitan, whatever magazine you're talking about, probably even People, I have a feeling most of them are doctored a little bit. I've got something in my eye, so let me get it out before I go on to the next one. But I'm curious if any of you listeners out there, if you created an AI-generated photograph of yourself and used it on a dating app or any kind of social media app. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So please give me a call and let me know, 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and this is 90.7 KBOO on your FM dial. Okay. Next one. My partner cheated and said it didn't mean anything. How should I feel? This is another pertinent one. So, having been betrayed by a partner years ago, I still don't understand why cheaters use the phrase he/she didn't mean anything to me. How am I supposed to even respond to a statement like that? Do cheaters think that that's supposed to somehow make a betrayed party feel better? Personally, I found it demeaning, and even worse, a betrayal, as if infidelity is excusable because the connection was casual. Of course, these days, I can play I See Red by Outlaw. It's a song. Do you guys know that song? I don't know that song. And let me get to the ethicist response here. This is exactly how cheaters try to reassure their partners that their infidelity was not going to lead to a serious relationship with a new partner, and that it might not spell the end of the existing relationship. It's just sex. If a romantic partnership is to move forward, it surely matters whether your unfaithful partner is a partner pining for somebody else, and cheaters understandably think that their mates will be comforted to hear otherwise. So why does that line backfire? In part because the cheated upon party doesn't want to hear the cheater minimize the transgression. If the betrayal didn't mean anything, then your outrage is rendered unwarranted and inappropriate. Cheaters demean the people they cheated with by dismissing them as meaningless, demean their partner by implying that their pain is unjustified, and that demeans the relationship they're in, and that they are betrayed by their beloved's trust for the liaison they insist was insignificant. I don't know how to best convey all this, but it might help if somebody set it to music. Anyway, your thoughts on it didn't mean anything. You too? That line, it didn't mean anything. My guests today are Kara and Day.
Hello.
So I'm going to just jump into Kara and Day now. My guests today are in a fairly new relationship. Kara has been a guest here before. Day is her new and current main squeeze. So why don't I let you two kind of describe, why don't you each describe a little bit of your own poly or open past, and then you can describe your relationship together and how you negotiate some of the things that may have been covered in these ethicist columns today. Mm-hmm. So Kara and Day, take it away.
I've been on the show before, so I'll just go over it quickly. I started practicing non-monogamy in 2018 with a then partner who is still in my life and still my best friend. We transitioned that relationship around 2021. We met in 2013, so it was a journey. Lots of learning. And have had partners here and there throughout the years. I was, without a better word, single. I was purposefully not partnered the last 3 years, doing a lot of self-work, and then this one came along. Go ahead.
I first started practicing ethical non-monogamy in 2014, and it was out of a failing relationship that had been monogamous up until a point, and the person that I was with had issues in past relationships with cheating, and Her therapist actually recommended, hey, maybe you check this out.
Monogamous.
And look into the opposite of monogamy, or one of the opposites, I guess. So then she, in turn, shared a book with me.
What was that book?
The book was The Ethical Slut.
I knew you were going to say that. It's either The Ethical Slut or...
I've heard about the book. What does it entail? Because you're not the first person to mention that book.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since I've read it, honestly. But it kind of opened my eyes to what ethical non-monogamy could look like. And it seemed to solve a lot of the issues that we were having in our relationship at that time. And so I was really open to it. And so I read the book, and I was like, you know, I'm really down to try this. And probably about 2 weeks after that, she was like, never mind. I don't want to be together anymore. And so she broke up with me, and I continued on to kind of put feelers out into the world and see, like, who else is into this? Who else would be open to this? And I proceeded to have a relationship with two different people who were also in a relationship. One of them I had dated prior, and the other one was new to me, but they were together. And I was like, we kind of all started dating each other. We called it a trifecta. One of the people in the relationship didn't like the term triad, so we were like, well, let's come up with our own term. Mm-hmm. So we called it the trifecta.
I like it.
Yeah, it's fun. And I think it
better than thruple.
Yeah, thruple's a little clunky. I mean, it gets the point across. But I think that's another thing that I enjoy about ethical non-monogamy and polyamory is that there's a lot of self-definition. There's okay, we don't have a word for this. Let's come up with one, you know? And that, it's fun and creative and different. And,
yeah, especially like in English, there isn't a lot of words. Like a lot, I mean, words are made up, but exactly, yeah, there's a lot of defining what things mean because there's not a lot of models for it.
And then we were just talking before we came on the air, and you're like the queen of defining new words for the listener.
When they come up, I don't always catch myself though. I sometimes will say a word and be like, everyone knows this, and you're good at catching me though, Dr. T. Yeah. And so when we met back in the day,
how did you meet before you go on?
Of all places, I was scrolling TikTok and his cute little face popped up and he just happened to live near me. And I thought, you know,
TikTok is not, it's not a dating app.
It's a social media app that your, what's called your For You page, so your landing page when you go to the app is from all over the world. Well, it's supposed to be. Who knows if it is anymore. But so you're not just seeing local people. You're not just seeing people you know. It's not your friends or your following. You're seeing everyone. You're seeing people from all over.
So a little like Insta.
Little bit.
Instagram.
It is now. Instagram, well, yeah, that's a
Instagram whole other seems to have evolved into this, like, huge gay dating app. Suddenly, I don't know, every time I go on there, like, all of these people who, like, have their exposed pictures of themselves, gay men.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cleverly. Yeah.
Yeah. And people don't even say hi on Insta. The first thing most messages read are you a top or a bottom?
Well, that's a little personal.
You could at least introduce yourself first, you know. That seems a little forward.
I think it depends on the app. On Instagram, that would be really forward.
Sure, yeah.
Grindr, that's like, that is introducing yourself.
Well, that is a sex app, isn't it, Grindr?
Meetup app, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Depends on what you're looking for.
But it's pretty straightforward.
I mean, I ended a 10-year relationship about 8 months ago with another transmasculine guy. I'm transmasculine. And started exploring meeting up with cisgender men for the first time, which I had never done. I mean, I'm 37 and I had never had that experience. So, I was making TikToks talking about some of my experiences, and that's
what Kara found. The first video I saw of Dave's was him talking about a hookup. And I was like, who's this cutie talking about hot things? And then went to your page, started stalking you naturally, and was like, oh, you're close to me, let's be friends. And that's how that happened. Mm-hmm. But we had paralleled a little bit because I had just went back to, it wasn't my first time in my 42 years, but went back to exploring having sex with cis men too. And so we kind of bonded over that, like, and we just sort of
sharing stories.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to what you just said a second ago about you were meeting cis men. Mm-hmm. You were meeting them for what purpose?
To hook up, to have sex. Yeah. So and to explore. I mean, I had never...
Were these dudes who, quote, identified as hetero or...
No. I'm mostly using Grindr, so... Mm-hmm.
So these were... Guys. Were mostly gay men?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Which... You know, I think was part of my hesitation to try for so long. Being a trans guy, I didn't know if I would find gay guys that were interested in hooking up with a trans guy.
There's a huge market.
There are lots of
them. There are lots.
Huh.
I was pleasantly surprised.
I was surprised too, actually, even as like a cis woman, how many queer men there actually are.
Yeah,
I think
lots of bi guys.
Yeah.
And these queer men don't have issues with equipment that may be different from what they're used to looking at?
Not at all. No, in fact, they seemed really excited by it.
Interesting.
Nice. Yeah,
I will tell you, when I was in private practice in West Hollywood, I had a lot of transmasculine patients in my practice who came to see me, and many of them shared that they would like go hang out in gay male sex clubs and bathhouses just for the fun experiences that somehow having an interaction with a penis made them feel more in touch with their own masculine energy.
Yeah.
So it just became about celebrating the phallus.
Yeah. And just, I think, masculine energy in general has been, it's been, yeah, fun to explore and really affirming, you know, to identify as male despite my body or with my body. It depends on the day, I guess. and having people reflect my masculine experience back to me has been really joyful. It's been really affirming and fun. Yeah.
Cool, I love it. So let's go back to the two of you. So you met on TikTok.
Kara, and I just messaged a gay best friend.
Yeah, I was like, I messaged my new bestie. And we hung out twice.
Your new bestie meaning your ex or this guy here?
No, this one.
I have not been attracted to femmes in a long time. A long time.
And I gleaned that from this. I was like, oh, I think he's a gay man. And I think that we would have a lot of fun together. I wasn't hitting on him when I messaged him, even though I was.
So when you met this individual right here,
I was pretty blown away. You know, interestingly enough, on TikTok, I wasn't really able to catch what she looked like.
I don't have like a presence or anything. I go on there just to scroll, but.
And she messaged me and was like, "Hey, do you want to be friends? I'm really fun." And I was like, "Sure."
I don't lie.
It's hard to make friends in your late 30s, so I was down. So we exchanged numbers. We started texting and had like a good texting vibe, a good volley.
And Kara, you said you're 42.
Mm-hmm.
And Day, how old are you?
I'm 37.
37. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So close enough.
Yeah. And then we decided to meet up to hang out. We went to Hopscotch, to the little interactive art exhibit in Portland.
Highly recommend.
It's very fun. There's lots of weird art stuff to interact with. And
so fun.
Lights, and it's beautiful. It's cool. Music and... buttons to push and
hang out with your inner child.
Yeah, it's playful. It's fun. And we went there, and I met up with her. She was sitting in the little like lobby area waiting for me because I took the wrong exit, of course. So I was a little late. I was like, "I'm so sorry. I'm on the way."
I'm curious because you two keep talking about wanting to be friends, but was there any kind of spark in terms of sexual attraction when you laid eyes on each other?
I was approaching it the way that I have approached my any friends that I've been attracted to, which still happens. is just like you boundary it, and I was, you know, I boundaried it. I was like, yeah, of course I'm attracted to him. He's look at him, you know, and but I've had friends where I've met that I have a friend that I'm thinking of specifically. I had a huge crush on them when I met them, and now they're like my brother, you know, like we have this beautiful friendship. So I was just kind of expecting that. So I had already boundaried it and compartmentalized it in my head, but he didn't know what I looked like, or like we didn't know each other yet.
Yeah, we hadn't interacted in person.
When you say boundaried it, you mean decided you were not going to be attracted to him, or you would not act on your attraction?
Correct, yeah. I just sort of put him in the friend box, mm-hmm. and
friend zoned him immediately.
That was that. That was that.
That worked well, huh?
Yeah.
So I saw her and was like, oh my. Like, is that who I've been talking to? Cute queer woman over there in the little scarf and the little denim jacket. And we hugged and started hanging out, walked around this exhibit together, and there were these moments where she would like grab my arm because I don't know, we were looking at something cool. And there it was just her touch was electricity.
Yeah, there were sparks, but I was like trying to like really chill out, Kara. This, you know. We're compartmentalizing.
And at the time, I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. I've been, like, super into masculinity for a while and have been exploring that a lot and was really caught by surprise.
So how did the two of you make that leap from mm-hmm. we're going to be friends to suddenly we're sexual or romantic?
It is really cool. We somehow, that night, managed to platonically watch Heated Rivalry, which... If anyone, whoever has seen that knows.
I've seen it.
Wonderful show. Don't get me started talking about it. We'll be here for the rest of the hour talking about Heated Rivalry. But we somehow watched that platonically in my bed and then hung out again, went to brunch, and then we...
Nothing platonic ever happens in bed. That I can tell you.
It was so interesting. We literally just sat. We just sat. Elbow to elbow and watched mm-hmm. the show together and kind of cuddled, but... Neither of us had said, like, oh, I'm really into you. Mm-mm. And we both were under the guise that, like, we're building a friendship. I'm open to being cuddly with my friends.
Me
and
too.
Having, you know.
That's what I do.
Soft, gentle touch expressions with people.
Watching
in general.
Hot it's boys. Good.
But also, yeah. It's a very sexually charged show. So it was an interesting...
it's probably generational, but I'm not cuddly with any of my friends. I mean, I hug them hello.
Goodbye, I think that's part of my... particular brand of like non-monogamy is just expressing intimacy with different kinds of, like different people in your life with whatever dynamic if you're both into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm cuddly with my friends. Jesse and I still cuddle even though we're not like sexually intimate anymore.
Mm-hmm.
For example. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I cuddle with my friends. That wasn't
nice.
It wasn't the only thing that was really surprising to me is how comfortable I already felt. That was what was surprising to me, not that I was cuddling a friend that made sense. Mm-hmm. And then
well, because we had both met in such a way and were already talking a lot about a lot of my hookup experiences with men, and
she was
also sharing her experiences hooking up with cis men, and so I had the opportunity to go to a male for male sex party that evening. We're at brunch, and I was like, hey, there's the sex party, and it's at a place where any gender can attend, but it's mainly focused on men for men. Do you want to go with me? Like, do you want to just, like, go and watch men have sex in public? Like,
yeah.
I'm curious. What is this place?
Sanctuary.
Sanctuary, yeah. Mm-hmm. I get the ads for their parties and such.
Yeah. And they're
also highly recommend.
They're really... accepting of all gender presentations and identities.
I'm curious, Kara, how did they respond to you being in their space?
It was just more, they were friendly, but I was just sort of a fly on the wall, which is fine with me. Yeah, it was, my voyeur came out, which is totally fine. She's fun. It felt comfortable because I really did make sure. I was like, ooh, like not only am I a woman, but I'm a femme woman. Like, how it is that? But yeah, it was, I think just queer spaces in general are that way. And I felt great.
I was going with the intention of maybe hooking up with someone.
Right.
I could not keep my eyes off of her. I was so distracted the whole time.
So this is before the two of you became... sexually involved?
Yes. And then
Heated Rivalry in a sex club, and we were just Oh, we're just friends.
Just friends.
But I do that with my friends. That's not out of the norm for me. I've been to Sanctuary a few times with just platonic friends.
Mm-hmm. What was that movie with Annette Bening where she was in a lesbian relationship and they would watch gay porn, she and her partner, in that movie?
Mm. I don't know that
I don't know, but now I need to see it.
Sounds good.
It does sound good.
But I have heard from my own lesbian friends that they occasionally enjoy watching gay porn, and I'm like, why?
Oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't identify as lesbian, but I think as a woman, just watching safer masculinity interact with each other is hot in and of itself. Mm-hmm. There's more to that, but
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been told by my friends who watch that it's something about how into it the guys get.
Yeah. And then, I mean, this has been a conversation around heated rivalry too, why women love it so much, but
women love that show?
One of the reasons I think is it, you can see love without gender interacting with it. You can see this relationship blossom on this equal playing field, and there isn't gender roles and gender in general getting in the way. And I think I'll say for myself, it was such a relief. It was just really beautiful to watch. And then there's like in and around safe masculinity. And I don't want to speak for all women, but that was my experience anyway. Mm-hmm. And a lot
interesting
of
term, safe masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Under patriarchy with cis straight men, it's not always, I haven't had the safest experiences with them in my life, and I know a lot of femmes, especially in my life, haven't either. I think it's pretty common. So, yeah. I think there's a lot of reasons. I mean, outside of the cinematography, everything in that show is incredible.
It's beautiful.
But, yeah. Gay porn's great. But I don't identify as lesbian either. I'm queer. Because, we're talking about, I'm queer. I'm queer. that's the best word for it. So just watching people have sex in general, I'm into it. Let's do it.
I will say I learned how, I like that term, safe masculinity. Mm. For me, being always picked on as a kid by straight boys, being called queer, sissy, faggot, all those words.
It comes from the same place of the hatred for feminine.
Yeah, that's how I always felt. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was being a psychologist actually in my practice when straight men started to come into my practice, and I realized these are the only people who cry every week in therapy.
I know. Well, it's so repressed.
Like, yes, because they have nowhere else where it's safe for them to cry.
Right.
And I developed an entire new appreciation for their species, straight men. I don't know if there are any straight dudes out there listening to this show, but feel free to call in if you are and let me know your thoughts. 503-231. Even if you're not a straight man, you're welcome to call in 503-231-8187. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a buzz, you are listening to Radical Romance. I'm Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and my guests today are Kara and Day. So go ahead, Kara and Day. Back to...
You were going to say something.
I was. So we went to the sex party.
Oh,
and,
right. Circling back.
It started to wind down, and we decided to... It was only like 10 p.m.
Yeah, I was like, strip club!
We were like, I don't know, let's do something else. So we went back to my car, and then I just asked her if I could kiss her, because I really wanted to, and had felt such sparks between us, and
I almost passed out. I was so taken aback and surprised and excited. Here we are.
And it was a very good kiss.
We did not end up going anywhere except to back to my house.
Back to your house, yes. Yep.
I'm curious for each of you, in certainly in my community, I'm from the generation we still call ourselves queer. I mean, gay rather than queer.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
But.
And that's a valid identity still. I just don't resonate with anything besides queer. I've tried them all on, and queer is what resonates for me.
But what I was going to say is that gay identity, so much of the social, sexual interaction revolves around substance use. Is that true of non-male queer communities?
I mean, I think that substance use is pretty pervasive in most communities, depending. I'm sober. I'm somebody who doesn't participate. I don't drink and I don't do anything. But, you know, I think, especially in the land of legal cannabis, you know, there's definitely a lot of substance use of one kind or another. Mm-hmm. And alcohol is so normalized. Drinking is so normalized. So yeah, I don't know if it matters what community you're in. I think it's kind of insidious. It's kind of everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is, from an outside in, and this is not in the entire population, but there is a like subculture, I think, of like gay men subculture, that when you start talking about just like even poppers,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
I didn't experience that, and there's not like a subculture in when I identified as a lesbian, but yeah.
Is poppers something you only identify with gay men?
There is a cultural connection there, I think.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm venturing into land that I don't know very well, so I don't know.
But I guess what I was asking you too is, are poppers used by non-gay men?
Oh yeah, I bet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
For the listeners, poppers are amyl nitrates, or what other things do they refer to them other than amyl nitrates? Which give people kind of a head rush and relaxes the muscles throughout the body, meaning set are a big part of that process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you have any questions or comments about that, 503-231-8187. Love to have a caller. My listeners would love to have a caller as well. 503-231-8187. Radical Romance, give us a call.
Also, hi, Aunt Ruth.
Aunt Rose in New Jersey. We're giving you a shout out. Thanks, Day. Yeah. I was telling them about you before we went on the air, but now you've heard it.
You said Ruth, I think, because we were talking about Dr. Ruth.
Oh, that's
yeah.
True.
Yeah. Ruth and Rose. Yeah, no, mine is Rose.
Cute.
Dr. Ruth is what they told me I need to sound like on the air.
Which you do. You're nailing it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you guys, back to your relationship.
Sure. So,
one of my favorite topics.
I think something that has really kind of struck me as I've gotten to know Kara is that I've had several relationships that had non-monogamy mixed into them, but I haven't had very many that started with non-monogamy from the beginning.
Yeah, same.
And started with a really concrete understanding of what that looks like and how to participate in that, as well as really great communication skills. Mm-hmm. And I think that those are some tenets to this practice.
For sure.
Is being able to really be honest with each other and communicate.
Like, thoroughly.
Yeah, like really be able to talk about your feelings.
Yeah.
It's really important.
I'm told we've got a caller on the line.
Yes.
Caller, is that Jeff?
It is. Hello, doctor.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I hope you're well. I am dangerously well myself. Thanks for asking. And thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of intrigued that you took this exit off the highway into the world of poppers and the like. Back in the day, that was indeed the thing in the club. And after amyl nitrates came butyl nitrates, which actually killed any number of people.
That was the word I was looking for, butyl nitrates.
Oh, butyl nitrates.
It is exquisitely dangerous.
Mm. Well, you and I are of the same generation, Jeff, so I remember that, yes.
Yes. I had a query concerning, and don't you love that word, query? I had a query concerning cuddly, as you guessed. Deliciously mentioned, and I am so thrilled that indeed someone can rest comfortably horizontally in a bed and watch television through their feet, which is what Johnny Carson used to say about his show, and still cuddle. Because there is a difference between touchy and handsy, if you know what I'm talking about. Now, I'm one of the types of people that loves to emphasize my communication with others by merely touching their forearm. I don't touch any other part of their person, but merely to emphasize what I am attempting to communicate with my interlocutor, I simply touch, gently touch their forearm, and it reinforces what is being communicated. Now, there are other people who are downright handsy, and that's a very, very different thing.
Yes.
And I hope that we can you can explain to me that a certain level of maturity is required to understand that cuddly is a good thing. And we talk about people that are touchy, and when they're touchy as people, they are basically not wanting to be touched.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, as always, the difference is consent. It's always consent. So, yeah, I mean, one, my first thought is we are so touch deprived in this society, and that has, I think, a lot to do with toxic monogamy is, and I'm not saying that all monogamy is toxic.
Did you say toxic monogamy?
I have to be really clear there. I'm not saying that all monogamy is toxic, but I'm talking about the particular default monogamy where it's expected in that toxic culture. Touch is seen as inherently sexual.
So in other words, if I had a spouse, of course they would be dead, but if I had a spouse and I saw that,
why did you say they would be dead if you had a spouse?
Because a doctor, as you know, I am asexual and not at all interested in having a spouse. Thank you.
Yes, I remember that.
If indeed I saw my spouse, my imaginary spouse, touching someone else, there would be an implication that I, as a toxically masculine person, would be so jealous, so outraged, as to take it personally as this merely touching someone was. And I believe that's what you're talking about, Kara, is this toxic monogamy. And that really is indeed very sick. But I believe everybody needs to understand that a gentle touch is what it takes. A gentle touch. And unfortunately, you're right. We are in a touch-deprived society.
So, Jeff, I have to ask you, do you have some friends you just simply cuddle with and it doesn't go any further than that?
No, but we touch a lot.
Yeah.
And we hug a lot.
Yeah.
And we communicate with our eyes and with our hands without being handsy. And handsy is offensive. Let's be honest. Handsy is really offensive, especially when you are the, shall we say, the victim of handsiness. Someone is pawing you. That is unwelcome. Am I right?
Handsy is sort of foreplay in a way.
Well, not if the person that's being handsed is not inviting the handsiness.
Right.
And you see it all the time. People paw someone. And that's neither foreplay, nor is that any kind of genuine intimacy.
Yeah.
That is a selfish handsiness. That means I want to control you.
Which is, again.
Anyway, those are my thoughts, and I thank you for mentioning.
Jeff, hold on a second. I don't want you to go yet. Where were you 2 weeks ago for my one-year anniversary show? We were just talking about Aunt Rose from New Jersey. She always texts me after every show. She's listening. She's 90 years old, and she texted me, "Where was Jeff on your anniversary show?" She's like, "I missed his call."
Well, that is so complimentary and flattering. Oh, it is! It is so sincere and wonderful, and I deeply appreciate that commentary. You tell your friend that I was here and I was listening, but I was not calling. because I was not prompted to call. Mm. And I warn anyone who is tempted to use poppers in this day and age that it can be dangerous because butyl nitrate will kill.
Definitely, yeah.
Thank you very, very much. I love your show. I am your number one fan, and I will permit no others to call themselves your number one fan.
Jeff and Rose.
Because I am.
Well, Aunt Rose is the number one fan. Jeff, you come second into Aunt Rose.
Oh, damn it. Damn it. Damn it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I think I have another caller waiting. Heather. Heather, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you guys today? I listened to the show from the beginning, and it was so interesting. And so much of it resonated with me as a gay woman in her early 50s. And it, what interested me so much, and actually even some of the last caller, he was like, handsiness, you know, what makes it so wrong? And I think it's the language and the intent and the learning that I know that I gathered as a queer woman coming out in the early 90s during the kind of like house revolution, mm-hmm. the sex revolution that I went through. And, you know, there were only three ways to be gay. You were a lesbian, you were, you know, a gay man, or you were bisexual mm-hmm. in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so much has changed
yeah.
that, like, I Absolutely. Was able to look back at my life and go, oh, wow, I was genderqueer my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
The yep. extreme level of tomboy that yep. I was, like literally being voted most handsome boy in the fourth grade. You know, like these things that were just kind of jettisoned because we didn't have the appropriate conversations yeah, around them.
We didn't have the language.
That gender and sexuality could be mm-hmm. separate or intertwined mm-hmm. and that everything mm-hmm. was such... it was a rainbow of color, basically. It was mm-hmm. not just anything black, gray, and white. And as we've evolved, you know, what happens is where you land with your orientation. Sometimes I think you like, this is where I resonate because I landed here.
Mm-hmm.
And like for me, I was what I always considered to be very like a what they call a serial monogamist,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of going from like long-term relationship to long-term relationship,
yeah.
and with the
Heather, let me ask you a question while I've got you on the phone.
Sure.
Before
yeah.
you go, at least you use the term genderqueer. Could you define that for the listeners?
So to me, and again, I'm not going to, you know, reference anything specifically clinical, but for me, as a gender, I was born a woman. I have no, like, personal, like, chromosomal differences that make me, you know, intergender or intersexed. But I, my entire life, really identified as more masculine than feminine. I was an extremely... physical, tough, and active kid. I was on a competitive sports team. I cut my hair off when I was 6 years old. I stayed that way until I was about 14. I think I started presenting more feminine as societally it became more and more difficult for me.
You're basically describing my entire childhood, and I think that not to interrupt.
On the inside. yeah, and in the 80s when kids were allowed to sort of be a little more, people left kind of kids alone, you could get away with it. But as you reached your sexuality,
yeah.
there was a demand for you to conform or
Absolutely.
Choose.
Yes.
And it made it really difficult to be true to yourself.
Yes.
And now I know that, like, when I was young, clearly I've been genderqueer my entire life. Mm-hmm. I feel like I inhabit two forms of myself, two-spirited. Sometimes I've been told I have a big old drag queen inside me. You know, like, this is just who and what I've always been. And, again, I didn't have the language for any of that. So as I came into self-evolvement, like, things change. Your sexuality changes. Mm-hmm. What you think you might be able to tolerate changes.
Mm-hmm.
And your evolution into how you feel about other people and their needs and sexuality can change.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not been in a particularly active, you know, relationship status, but I think probably at this point in my life, it would be very likely that I would end up maybe likely in some sort of a poly situation mm-hmm. myself. I wouldn't have said that when I was a young woman,
yeah.
but a lot of these things, as you evolve
yep.
and change and grow,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is sort of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I identify as queer too, as, mm-hmm. as a 53-year-old woman. To me,
mm-hmm.
that's a great blanket.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
Because it
yeah.
describes my gender, sexuality, my my politics, my entire being.
Right. Yes. That's how I feel too. And yeah. I got kind of shoved into the bisexual category right. when I was younger, and I'm like, that just doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah.
Heather.
Quite fit, you know.
Heather, thanks for the definition and thanks for the call. I appreciate you. Call again.
Thanks for sharing your story. I love your hot times. Keep it up. Love it. Fabulous. Thank you. Voyeurs want to hear it. We love it.
Nice. Carmina, do we have another caller? No. Oh, I thought you gave me the signal. Oh, we don't.
Okay. 10 minutes.
I misread.
It was just the time. That was fun. Heather and I should hang out.
Yeah. Heather, call again. Please do. I appreciate your callers like you. And a last few minutes, if you have a call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. You've been listening to Radical Romance. I'm Dr. Tony Zimbardi. I am here on the second and fourth Wednesday morning of every month from 10 till 11 a.m. I always appreciate your calls. And I always appreciate my guests like today, Kara and Day. Super fun people. Kara, I called her the queen of definitions.
Definition jargon queen.
The sexual jargon for the new millennium. Appreciate all this terminology and all of my callers today. Heather, Jeff, you've all been a ton of fun. We still have about 10 minutes before we need to go off. Normally they need to kick me out of this room because there's another live show after me, but I'm not sure if that's happening today. Do you know, Carmine? Is that happening today? No, we don't know.
Well, before we took that call, I was saying the really awesome thing for me in the relationship that I'm building with Kara is that we are practicing non-monogamy from the beginning with the foundation of experience already in non-monogamy, which is different than some of the other non-monogamous experiences I've had. So
yeah, we started there. We didn't move into non-monogamy, which was a lot of my past experiences.
Yes, yeah. Which I think has also allowed us to start just really, really honest in a way that really helps it flourish, the relationship and the non-monogamy.
Oh, you guys have to tell me a story about how you introduce guest stars into your series.
We haven't yet, but we're working on it.
Well, I have a couple leads.
Yeah.
Always good.
So we'll have to audition. I have to audition them first.
I'm not on the apps anymore. I was tired. But
I am.
Maybe in the summer. When I get my summer slutty energy back.
Summer lovin'.
I was like, can we say slut? But we said ethical slut. Yeah, so that works.
That's true.
Yeah, but
SLUT. Slut is a 4-letter word, is it not? But
Day's out there scouting for us.
Yeah, and for myself.
Yeah. Yes, sure.
Which is another fun element, is that I can I go have hookups, and then I come back and tell her everything.
So you're the screener.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun time. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun. We'll have to come on after we actually
do it. Okay.
Bring one. What term were we coming up with earlier? It wasn't triad, it was...
Trifecta.
Now, that's a term just the two of you use.
That was a previous relationship that I was in.
Yeah.
Trifecta rather than thruple or triad. Mm-hmm. Feel free to use it. We're coming up with new sexual terminology.
Yeah. Or make up your own.
Yeah.
We have about 3 minutes if you want to call in with your own sexual terminology, 503-231-8187. Call in and let the three of us know. I personally love learning new words.
It's fun.
Day's a wordsmith. Yeah. You are.
Any other new words for us, Day, before we...
Now the pressure's on.
Vermilion. vermilion is the pink skin of your lips.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Word of the day.
Aren't our lips kind of pink in general?
Well, yeah, but there's like a line where it changes from that like soft pink skin.
Somewhere in there on the lip? Okay, vermilion.
Vermilion.
Where'd you come up with that one, Day?
Well, I'm a body piercer, so it's actually a technical term that I use.
You talk anatomy.
I can do that.
We've got about 5 minutes left. Anything you two want to share before we wrap up for today?
Well, we didn't talk a whole lot about non-monogamy itself, but I think that maybe that's another show for another time. Story. Well, we did, but
yeah. But we haven't really practiced a ton of it together yet. I mean, I have other partners. But
you have other partners. Do you have other partners?
Yes. Not as consistently, though. Yeah, I don't have like a consistent someone I see. That was fun too, because I got to meet Day's other partners. I love that. You know, like the whole community of it is
the compersion.
Yeah. Love begets love, and I love that. Mm.
My current main squeeze is Stuart. Shout out to Stuart. Hey, Stuart, listening out there in St. John's. He uses the phrase, I am one of your many boyfriends, and you are one of mine.
Yes. Love it.
Stuart.
And that's how we embrace the concept of non-monogamy in our relationship. He also has a certain terminology that I like in terms of emotional monogamy versus physical non-monogamy.
I used to practice that. Yeah, that's definitely something. I personally don't want to restrict anyone about anything. As far, like, of course I have boundaries, but I'm not going to tell you who to fall in love with or how to feel about anybody. I don't. Yeah, that's not something I subscribe to. So we talked about that a little bit.
We have.
Yeah. Love begets love.
Love it.
Yeah. I have yet to meet Stuart. I want to meet him.
You heard Stuart?
Hmm?
We'll make it happen.
Cute. Double date brunch.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Dr. T just looking at us.
This is fun.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's been a fun show. You've been a... Is it okay to call you guys a couple? Do you identify as a couple?
We do.
Mm-hmm.
I asked... Nice.
Yeah.
We discussed what we would call ourselves on January 1st, sitting at a little...
I said Happy New
cute
Year.
Little coffee shop.
Yeah.
And... We tried a couple words, and then we were like, how does boyfriend-girlfriend feel?
And we were both
like, yeah, that feels good. So that's what we are to each other.
Yeah, speaking of, like, defining things, it's really, like, checking in with how it feels in your body, too.
Absolutely.
That felt good. I almost fell out of my chair. It felt so good.
Yeah, it was all
smiles. We keep having that discussion as well, the boyfriend term.
Yep.
Is it all right for either one of us to use that term or to, more importantly, introduce... our significant other to someone else as a boyfriend.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of how it got brought up. It's like, how do I talk about you to other people?
Right.
Yeah. I'm currently using main squeeze.
I like that. I like sweeties, too.
Sweeties. People use sweeties.
Sweetie, I like that one, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has, like, a certain connotation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can define it how you want in your dynamic, but...
Yeah.
Boyfriend.
Girlfriend.
That felt good to us.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being here today. My guests were Kara and Day, and I'm Dr. Tony Zimbardi. I'll be back here the second Wednesday of February.
Quite as often as I could have, and maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel second best,
you did, you did.
Girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. And maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times. And I guess I never told. I'm so happy that you're mine. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. But you were always on my mind. You were always.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m.